Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hello everyone, Dave here. Just wanted to apologise for the rather sporadic nature of the podcast over the last couple of weeks. I've been massively slammed with stuff from Comic-Con, which you can now find on the YouTube channel, which is of course youtube.com/geektown. But I'm also away in America at the moment, so getting people together to get the podcast done has been a little bit problematic. So this week I'm going to put up a behind the scenes podcast. I am back at the end of the month. I'm back in the UK. We will be kicking off the return with the Geektown Awards podcast as well. So the big competition that we run every December, we will be running that from the first episode when I'm back there as well. So hopefully might get some other interview podcasts going up as well. But this one is an episode of the Geektown Behind the Scenes podcast. And I'm chatting with a really interesting guy. He's fascinating, award-winning Hollywood editor and producer, Zach Arnold. Zach is an editor on Netflix's smash hit series, Cobra Kai. However, he's also the founder of Optimize Yourself. It's a brilliant podcast series, which you can find at optimizeyourself.me. It's also a coaching program as well, which is designed to help creative professionals get through their working lives without having to sacrifice their health, their relationships, and their sanity in the process. He was really interesting to talk to. We do talk a lot, obviously, about Cobra Kai, and he's editing for that. That was a really interesting story of how he kind of got involved with it, because he was a massive fan of the Karate Kid films. So he actively pursued the editing gig on Cobra Kai after watching the first season. In the interview, we discussed quite a lot how his love and encyclopedic knowledge of the movies actually helps him with the editing process on the Netflix drama as well. His other credits outside of Cobra Kai include things like Empire, Burn Notice, and Glee. We also chatted a little bit about a really interesting documentary film he made called Go Far, the Christopher Rush story, which was about a friend of his. He directed that, and we talk a little bit about that as well. It's a really interesting interview, this one. It's well worth listening to. If you want to hear more behind the scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geektown Radio. This will also give you our weekly Geektown Radio podcast that brings you the latest TV, film, and gaming news. You can also go to the website at geektown.co.uk for daily news stories and all the latest US and UK TV premiere dates. As I say, it's going to be a bit sporadic for the next couple of weeks, but we will be back at the end of the month. We'll be back to normal shows. We will be launching the Geektown Awards as well, so keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, here is the interview with Zach Arnold.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code program.
So thank you for coming on and spending a bit of time to chat through your work and your various stuff with me. Cobra Kai, of course, is the big thing that you're working on as an editor, but you've got a whole bunch of other things going on as well, which we'll get to. So I know you've spoken a little bit about this before on various different shows, but well, before we get into actual Cobra Kai itself, how did you get into the editing?
Yeah, first? So originally I got into editing at a very, very young age. I was about 9 years old, and this was way back in the day of VHS camcorders. And, you know, this is before the internet and YouTube and iPhones. And my older brother had come home with a brand new VHS camcorder, and he said, let's run around the house and let's make a movie. Like, okay. Like, it really was my thing at the time. And we ran around the house all weekend, basically chasing each other with our Nintendo guns from the game Duck Hunt, like just, you know, doing all this fun stuff. Not a whole lot of story involved. And at the end of the weekend, I said, that sucked. That was really boring. And it was really hot and it was tedious. And we only have like a few minutes of stuff after all that work. Didn't like it at all. However, a couple of weeks later, he came back and he had taken exactly what we had shot. He had cut it together and he had scored it with music from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And it was the coolest thing I had ever seen in my life. My jaw dropped and I said, how did you do that? And that was the beginning of my just, you know, absolute obsession with editing. And from that point on, I had two VCRs and I was hitting play on one and recording the other. And I was making highlight tapes of my favorite movies. And I was shooting my own films with my friends for years and years. By the time I was a sophomore in high school, I already had started a business where I was editing things for local businesses and for my high school sports teams. And then in college, I went to college at the University of Michigan and learned film studies. And every second that I wasn't writing papers about films like Potemkin and Citizen Kane for the 12th time, I was in the edit suites learning all the software. So it's, I've essentially been enamored with the process of storytelling and putting the pieces together since I was 9 years old.
Wow, that's incredible. And Cobra Kai, which this was a show, it's fair to say, I think you were a fan of before you actually got to it. And it was one that you actually went out and actively chased, I believe.
Yes, I was very, very specific and strategic about working on the show. The reason being that if we also rewind way back to even before I was nine, when I was a kid, Karate Kid was my Star Wars. All of my friends were enamored with Star Wars. And I think at the time it was right after Return of the Jedi had come out and they had all the action figures and the movies. And I didn't get it. I have no problem with Star Wars. I think it's amazing. It's just not my thing. But when the Karate Kid came out, I was obsessed. I mean, like, I was beating up my mattress and like I was learning the crane kick, and it was totally my thing. And it became very influential in who I became, both as an adolescent and an adult, where I've been very active in martial arts and now American Ninja Warrior, doing all of these things that are very much influenced by that film. So essentially the way that this all worked out is when the original season one of Cobra Kai came out, most people probably know this, but for those that don't, it was actually a little tiny show on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it had just released the whole season, 10 episodes on YouTube. And I just saw one of those banner ads that said trailer for Cobra Kai. And I was like, what is this? Oh my God, this is going to be the dumbest thing ever. How dare they? How dare you take my childhood and your room? It because frankly, a lot of people have done that to other properties from the 70s and
Absolutely.
The 80s.
So yes,
I was terrified. So I watched the trailer and I'm thinking, okay, so this doesn't look horrible. So I'm going to hate watch the pilot. I'm just going to hate watch the pilot so I can, you know, just confirm all my suspicions. How dare they? Like everybody else on the planet, I watched the pilot and I was completely and totally sucked in. I watched the entire first season in one sitting, and I had other things to do that day, but I just stopped everything and I watched the whole season. And at the end of it, I looked at the screen and I said, I am cutting this show. There is no question in my mind that if there was ever a show on the planet that I was made to edit, this is the one. So I started the research process and looked to see if I can find anybody at all that I had a connection with. And it took me a few hours of really digging through the depths of IMDb. But I found one name of one producer that worked on the show for like a month or two that I had worked with years ago, sent them a message and said hi, and eventually made a connection of a connection and got myself in the room for the interview. and essentially talked myself into the job in the room.
Wow. So that was from season two onwards then? You
Yeah. So I started the beginning of season two and I've been on ever since.
Wow. Yeah. Coming to something like that and being such a huge fan of it, I mean, that really must have been your dream gig.
It really was a dream gig. And the one challenge that comes with it is that, and I've had this experience before on other shows, specifically the first breakout hit that I worked on was Burn Notice.
Yes.
And I came into that show season four and I was a big fan of it before that. And what sometimes happens is that once you see everything happening behind the curtain, you become a little bit less of a fan because it kind of loses this mystique. Mm-hmm. And I will say that there's a little bit of that with Cobra Kai, but there are still days, even 4 years into it, having just finished season five, even working on season five, there are still moments where I'm cutting scenes saying, I'm working with Billy Zabka and Ralph Macchio. Like, when exactly did this happen? But at the same time, once you see all the raw takes and how they break down the fight scenes, and I'm the guy that has to figure out how to put all the pieces together, and sometimes the pieces don't go together, it loses a little bit of its mystique, but it has so much of it that it certainly doesn't lose all of its luster.
Yeah, it's gone from being, like you say, this little sort of YouTube show that YouTube kind of went, oh, well, but yeah, it's fine. You can, yeah, we'll let you go. You can go and find somebody else to air it. We're not doing this sort of stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And landed on Netflix and just exploded into this enormous thing. The fan following around it is absolutely phenomenal. So what is your approach to it? I mean, what's your sort of process of working through an episode of it?
Yeah, so essentially the way that it works for anybody that has never seen the process from the inside is that as they're shooting, we are editing. Some people think that when they're shooting, like they shoot the whole season or whatever it is and we get it. But whatever they're shooting on a Monday, I'm getting on a Tuesday morning, and they shoot in Atlanta. I'm in Los Angeles, but with all the internet technology, they can get it to us within hours. Mm-hmm. So as they're shooting, I'm cutting and I'm just watching all of the raw dailies. And on this show, lots and lots of raw dailies. Like there will just be some days where we get 5, 6, 7, even 10 hours of raw footage for one scene. And I have to go through and sift through all of it and cut it all together. So that's kind of the basic stuff, kind of the bare bones machinations of it. But as far as my more specific and creative approach to it, it's very, very important that we're honoring the original series. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that a lot of the reboots of very valued properties don't work is because they don't understand what worked about the original property, and then they're trying to turn it into something different. And I take a little bit of responsibility for it, but most of it really goes to the three showrunners. They're the ones that protect the integrity of the original series. But as an editor, I also have to make sure that my choice of music or the way that I cut a scene or a sequence, like I don't want to introduce all these new crazy fangled techniques that don't feel like they belong in the world of The Karate Kid or Cobra Kai. And another really, really important thing that we have to do as editors is a lot of times when you see the flashbacks that go to the original property in the series, those weren't written in. Sometimes they were, but sometimes when I'm cutting a scene, because I've seen the original so many times, there'll just be a line of dialogue and an image flashes in my head. I'm like, oh, this reminds me of this one scene from The Karate Kid 1. And because I have that library in my brain, I can pull that back in there. So a lot of that is just the fact that I'm such a fan and I've literally memorized those films, specifically the first one. It's very easy for me to recall what would be the best fit. But it's always about how do we protect the integrity of the mythology first, but then also how do we update it? Because it certainly didn't have all the heavy metal rock music and wasn't from Johnny's point of view in the original. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult. And I think we walked the line pretty well, but it's very difficult to both honor the original series, but make the 2020 version of it that feels updated. So that's always our challenge. And we're always working on that with every single scene.
Yeah, you can see that. I mean, there is definitely a love in there from everybody that works on the show. I've interviewed a couple of other people, Hero and Janelle, who mm-hmm. are the stunt guys, and Phil McGowan, who I think is the score mixer for it. And they all have this huge love for the franchise and the series. How much control do you get as the editor in this? I mean, you know, because you're working with various directors, and I think there were a couple of editors just that work on the show as well.
There's three of us. Yeah. It's a three editor rotation.
So when you're working with kind of different directors each time and keeping that consistency, how much control do you actually get? Because presumably it's not just like, here's a bunch of stuff, So where does that all fit together?
Sure. I mean, as far as the editorial process, we have complete and total control. role. There's very, very, if any, micromanaging of the process until we start getting into notes. So I've never been on a show before where up until I deliver an editor's cut, I don't hear anything from anybody. They just have complete and total trust. And they're essentially saying, you give me what you think is the best version. And then I'm going to give you a bunch of notes. So we can get to what is your vision plus our shared vision. And we can find the best version with all of our various ideas integrated. But on most TV shows that I've done in the past or most feature films that I've done in the past, you'll sometimes get pages and pages and pages. Well, after watching the dailies or after shooting the scene, I think we should do this, that, and the other thing. And that really hampers the creativity of the editor in their first pass. I feel that if you're going to hire somebody in that role, you need to trust them in that role. Mm-hmm. And we're never bothered. Like I really was, there were a couple of times where you literally pick up your phone and you're like, does this thing still work? Like nobody's calling me. Nobody's sending me emails. They're just letting me cut. So it's a pretty amazing freedom. But then by the same token, once we start working with the showrunner specifically, they know exactly what they want. They're very detail oriented, and they are perfectionists mm-hmm. to the nth degree. So we are workshopping endlessly for months and months to get what they believe is the perfect version of that episode. So during that process, obviously, there's a little bit less freedom because you're working towards their vision. But I feel that for every portion of the story or the tone or the pace where the editor has influence, we have complete and total control. Obviously, I can't change the words that they say or the scenes that they're set in or the general storyline. All of that credit goes to the writers. Yeah. But anything that is within the control of an editor, we are given complete freedom.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that is rare for something like that. And I mean, with it being a Netflix show rather than a network show, what are the time pressures like? Because I mean, I know network particularly can be horrifically fast in terms of its turnaround. Is that easier with a Netflix series?
I'm not going to use the word easier. I'm going to say it's simpler. Yes. And what I mean by that, because simple and easy are two very different concepts. Mm-hmm. It's simpler because in the world of network, you're always up against an air date. So there's yeah. only so much time to get things done. And when you feel like you're not going to meet that deadline, it just means that you need to work more hours, whether it's late nights, whether it's weekends. I've been on shows where I've been on a mixed stage on a Friday, and what we were watching was going to be on the air the next Wednesday, and we had to make editorial changes. Like I've been in that situation where yeah. it's just insane. And the reason that I say it's simpler is because we do just as much, or frankly, even more editorial work on Cobra Kai than I've ever done on any other TV show. But because we are delivering the entire season as one chunk, and then we hand it to Netflix, and then they air it all at the same time, we essentially just extend the schedule. Mm-hmm. So as far as the amount of notes, the complexity of notes, I don't feel like I'm working on a TV show. I feel like I'm working on a 10 episode feature film. So it's much more complex, but we do have more time and less of that. We've got an air date on Monday kind of pressure.
Yeah. I mean, because of course you have worked on network TV, like sort of Burn Notice. You worked on Empire as well.
I was on the first two seasons of Empire. Yep.
Yeah. I know Phil Eisler reasonably well because I've interviewed him a whole bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And I know the turnaround on that got ridiculous at some points.
That was by far the most challenging show that I ever worked on as far as logistics and schedule. Creatively, I loved it. The logistics and schedule were very overwhelming.
Yeah. I remember him the same sort of situation. It was like I think it was the night before it was due to go on uh-huh. air or something. And
he pulled some amazing, amazing miracles on that show. It's like, well, we need to rescore this entire thing with a 100-piece orchestra and we need to have it ready by this afternoon so we can mix it tomorrow and air Monday. It's like, okay, whatever. So yes. I don't know how he does what he does.
Yeah, he is phenomenal at his job. So, I mean, working on the show itself, in terms of the actual scenes and things, are there any particular things that stand out to you in terms of scenes that were incredibly memorable to put together, to cut, or particularly difficult to do?
Sure. I think that first of all, this is like, you know, Sophie's Choice, having to choose my favorite scene on
yes,
Cobra
of course.
Kai. It's nearly impossible. But if I were to think about the three that really stand out the most that I had the opportunity to work on, either as far as challenging or just the most rewarding, I would say the most challenging scene or scenes that I worked on were the two fight sequences in the All Valley tournament and the season 4 finale.
Right. Yeah.
As far as the most rewarding, I would say it's the final scene in season 3 where Johnny and Daniel finally come together. So as far as the most challenging, the amount of footage that I got for those two finals fight sequences was almost insurmountable. I've never seen anything like it before in 20 years of working in features and TV. And granted, I haven't worked on the Avengers or anything at that level, so I'm sure they get more, but they also have more time and infinitely more money and more staff.
Yeah.
But for anybody that doesn't know how they cover a scene, when they shoot a scene, every time they move the camera, they add a letter. It's called a setup. So a wide shot is going to be, you know, scene 16. And then they move the camera to a close up, 16A, 16B, et cetera, et cetera. So every time they change position to get different coverage, they add a letter. So the one scene just between Sam and Tori was up to setup B, D, which means they had to go through the alphabet twice. And each setup had three cameras. So that was 57 camera setups with three cameras running on each setup. Oh, so when I started getting that material, I was sending all the red flags via Slack and email, like, I'm going to need more time. There is no way that I can meet my deadline. Just watching the footage alone is going to take me longer than it's expecting you for me to deliver to you to send the finished cut. Mm-hmm. So that was incredibly challenging. And there was a lot of work that I had to do to, in a way, rewrite some of the fight sequence, because the choreographers on the show are amazing, but it's also real life and there are things called gravity and long hours and, you know, everybody's not a machine. So there are certain points that sometimes don't quite hit the way that they wanted to, or they missed an angle. So essentially I have to rewrite the order of the choreography. Mm-hmm. So that was the most challenging sequence that I've ever worked on. The most rewarding one, like I said, was the one at the end of season three where Johnny and Daniel finally come together. As far as cutting a scene itself, that was easy. It was very simple coverage and Daniel walks out on the porch and students walk into the backyard and Johnny walks in. The hard part was, what is the piece of music that tells this story? Right. Because and this is where me being such a huge fan and wanting to protect the mythology of the series really comes into play. So essentially the song that was written into the script, because sometimes the showrunners and the writers will write a song into the script, I didn't feel it was the right song. And again, we have the freedom to share our thoughts. So even before showing it to anybody, I just emailed the director or writer of the episode. And I said, I don't think this song is the right one. He's like, cool. You present what you think is the best one. We'll tell you if we agree or disagree. So I just felt this immense pressure, because as a fan, I'm thinking it has been over 30 years that these two have been warring with each other. And it's always been this thing. They're finally coming together. What is the song? What is the thing that just has this giant build up and all of a sudden the song explodes? I'm like, oh, I know what that is. It's like, it's Phil Collins in the Air Tonight. So I started doing a search for it. And as I was doing a search, I found another cover of it that sounded almost the same, but also had a lot of that kind of rock metal edge.
Right.
The Cobra Kai now has. So it was a blending of old and new. And I literally broke a sweat and my heart started to pound when I listened to it. I'm like, oh my God, I think this is the song. And I was so nervous that when I cut in the scene, I literally was dripping sweat. I was so excited about this, but I said to my assistant, you got to come in here and watch this. Tell me if I'm crazy. Is this working? I don't know if this is working. I'm terrified to show this to them if it doesn't work. And he watched it and he's like, dude, that's the song. So one of our traditions on the show is that every season finale, we screen the very first editor's cut for the showrunners, which is very uncommon. Like, they usually see later cuts after directors and other producers have worked through it. So it's a lot of pressure to show them your editor's cut. Mm-hmm. And I just remember for 5 minutes before hitting that final scene, like dripping in sweat, like, oh my God, I hope they like it. I hope they like it. I hope they like it. And then when it started to play, like, you just know the first few notes and they were just like, oh yeah. And then it built up and they're like, yes. And they were like cheering in the room and they're like, that was awesome. And it stuck. So basically what you see in the final version of the season three finale is what I did in my editor's cut.
That's amazing. Wow. That's awesome. It's such a phenomenal show. And as you mentioned before, you've got a whole bunch of other things that, I mean, you've directed yourself as well as you did a documentary, which having just said you're not the biggest Star Wars fan, narrated by Mark Hamill. So
yes. Well, narrated by Mark Hamill. Yes. So yeah, that's an interesting story where, without going too deep into it. So I wrote, produced and directed a documentary that started as very much just a passion project for a very close friend of mine that had passed away. Mm-hmm. And the short version of it is that I was at his funeral service and I'd known him for several years and had met him in college, and he had muscular dystrophy. So he was a quadriplegic, could not use his arms and his legs. And I just knew him as a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. But during during the funeral service, everybody started talking about all of these things that he had accomplished throughout his life, none of which he shared with me because he was very, very humble. Mm-hmm. And the short list is that he was the national poster child for muscular dystrophy. And for anybody that is roughly our age and older, they remember the Labor Day telethons and Jerry Lewis raising millions of dollars. And my friend Christopher Rush was by his side traveling all over the country on camera with him raising these millions of dollars. And amongst his other accomplishments, one of them was that he was the first quadriplegic to become a licensed scuba diver.
Wow.
And as I was sitting in the funeral service hearing all this, I remember thinking to myself, this story cannot end here. Mm-hmm. And then I started to think a little bit further and I looked around and I'm thinking, crap, it's going to have to be me, isn't it? I'm going to have to be the one that tells the story because I'm the filmmaking friend. So that was the beginning of an 8-year journey to tell his story. And one of Christopher's obsessions in life was Star Wars.
Oh.
Because the idea of the Force is how he achieved what he did, because he's literally sitting in a chair, no arms, no legs, and he had to learn to take his disability and turn it into a superpower. So he used his intellect to achieve everything that he achieved. So I am who I am today because of knowing him. The fact that I can embrace any challenge and I can find a way to frame it positively and I can go after really difficult goals is because of him. Because if he can literally say, you know what, I can't use my arms or my legs, so go ahead and weight me down and throw me in the ocean. Like, imagine the amount of courage and trust that takes. Like, I have no excuses.
Yeah.
So as I was learning he had this obsession with Star Wars, I wanted to use Star Wars to tell his story. So I have multiple scenes from the movie, including the whole Death Star sequence. And I remember as I was showing people early cuts, they're like, man, I loved all the Star Wars stuff, but you're never going to get the rights to that. I'm like, oh, yes, I will. They're like, no, you'll never get it. So not only did I get the rights to what's give or take about 5 minutes of Star Wars footage and John Williams' score, I got Mark Hamill to narrate in the voice of Christopher Rush. So his childhood hero, who he tried to embody, is the voice of Christopher Rush in this documentary.
That's amazing. That's really quite astounding. It's what's it called? Go Far, the Christopher Rush story.
Go Far, the Christopher Rush story. It used to be available on all digital platforms, but because the distributor that I use for all the digital distribution has gone out of business, like many, many others have in this period of time, they can just go to gofarmovie.com and I have the whole thing available to watch for free.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. I can go and check that out. That's amazing. The other thing, of course, which is your like other gig is the Optimize Yourself podcast, which is, I was looking around the website for it. It's an incredible setup you've got for just sort of optimize a whole bunch of things within your life, basically. I mean, do you want to explain what it is? And then,
yes, I'd be more than happy to. And I'll start by saying the same thing that I said to the creators of Cobra Kai in my season 4 interview when they wanted to hire me to come back for season 4 and 5. I said, I will come back if you understand that Cobra Kai is my side hustle. And they laughed. And I said, no, I'm being serious. What I do for a living is I run the Optimize Yourself podcast and coaching program. This is my main priority. I'm going to give you everything else I've got, but Cobra Kai is my side hustle. And they laughed and they said, all right, whatever it takes, we just want you to come back and work on the show with us. So Optimize Yourself is what I do for a living. And essentially I work with creative professionals in a variety of professions, most of whom are in Hollywood and do the similar work to what I do, but I work with people all over the world on 6 continents so I can help them design a more fulfilling creative career. However, they have to do it without sacrificing their health, their relationships, or their sanity in the process. Mm-hmm. Because right now we have just devolved into this world where we are just all these machines and these widgets that are expected to produce 24/7. And we almost have this cult-like feeling of productivity. And as soon as we can't produce at the highest levels anymore, we become a replaceable widget and somebody else ends up doing the same job until they become burned out. And it's this endless cycle. So I'm teaching creative people how they can build a more fulfilling career, which is not necessarily just resumes and websites and like all the machinations of learning your craft and your skills. It's also about learning, how do I do it sustainably so I can move more at my desk, so I can do it getting 8 hours of sleep every night, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So like you said, I cover whole different areas when it comes to lifestyle. Productivity, time management is definitely an area of interest for me. And then most importantly, how do I build relationships with people? That's one of the biggest things for introverts, including myself, that do creative work, is I just want to sit in my room all day long and I want to do cool stuff and don't bother me, right? But it doesn't work that way. You're not going to get discovered magically. You have to put yourself out there. So I help all of the creative introverts out there that that want to figure out, how do I do the work that I love for a living without it destroying me?
Yeah, that's quite incredible. I mean, you know, you mentioned the time management stuff there as well. And I mean, you've got a sign on your back wall that says dad on it. So you're obviously a father, you're an editor, you've got the optimize yourself stuff, just managing. And you also mentioned, I mean, it mentions on your website doing stuff for American Ninja Warrior, which is, you know, another thing you do. So, I mean, your time management must be pretty good at this point, I would have thought.
Yes, it's not pretty good. It's the number one thing that I prioritize.
Yeah.
I was on a podcast very similar to this one a week or two ago, specifically run by editors. And they had said, what is the number one skill? If you're talking to editors all over the world, what's the number one skill that they need to practice to become better editors? And I said, it's time management. And they're like, I thought it was going to be like some plugin or Avid or Premiere tricks. And I'm like, no, you got to learn time management. And the reason that I can do all the things that I do and still get 8 hours of sleep every single night is because I've become really, really good at prioritizing and organizing my time and my priorities. Mm-hmm. So that was really the first skill that I started with, because years ago, especially when I was making Go Far, my life was a disaster. I mean, it was just a train wreck of a mess. One of the things that I talk about very openly with my podcast and my newsletter and my coaching program is that I was diagnosed with adult onset ADHD when I was about 25, which nice. Just hit me like a ton of bricks, because I was so organized and I was getting everything done and my life was, it all made sense. I was very regimented and disciplined. And then all of a sudden I couldn't even pay my bills and do my laundry the same day. Like, I would just stare at the wall with overwhelm and I didn't understand what was going on. So I had to learn time management from scratch. And once I better learned how to manage my time, then my creativity started to increase, my productivity started to increase, and I had all these other things that I wanted to do, and I learned how to quote unquote find time to do them. Mm-hmm. That's one of the misnomers about time, is everybody says, well, I can't find it. You're not going to, because it's not hiding. It's right there on your calendar. It is the one equalizer. We all get 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. So it's not about finding time. It's about, how do I prioritize it according to my values? So for me, I value my creative work. I value my coaching program. I value my family. And I value my training for American Ninja Warrior. Those are the four things you're going to find on my calendar. You're not going to find a lot of other things that interfere with those.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's very true. I mean, you know, looking through your IMDb stuff, you've worked on a bunch of different things, but it's been very much sort of, you've been very selective in what you've picked. And, you know, that seems to be a very deliberate choice in your case.
Very much so, yeah. One of the most important things that I teach the students in my coaching program is the power of the word no. Most people that do creative work, they say yes, job after job after job after job. And then they eventually get to the point where they ask, how in the world did I get here? I'm mm-hmm. pigeonholed doing this one thing. How did this happen? It's because they continue to say yes to every job over and over. And the reason is usually because of the fear of saying no. Either you're going to burn bridges or you're not going to be able to pay the bills, whatever that reason might be, they're afraid to say no. What I've always wanted to do is, if you go to IMDb, you can see everything that I've said yes to. It's very clear. I wish there were an IMDb or a website that had a list of all the credits I said no to. Because you look at some of those and you're like, were you crazy? Why would you have turned that down? But if I had said yes to those things, I would have said no to Cobra Kai, or I would have said no to my family, or I would have said no to being able to build a coaching program and host a podcast. So if you want to be able to really direct and control the direction of your career, you have to be willing to say no to the wrong things.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, that very much resonates with me. I mean, because I do this full time. I run primarily the website, the podcast as well. And all that stems off me coming to saying no to somebody, because I was a web developer for 20 years, pretty much from the start of when the web became a thing. I was just burnt out from it. And mm-hmm. yeah, 20 years doing the same thing. And it wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. And I just like, no. It's one of those things that it was the best thing I've ever done. Because
yep. And you interchange the words web developer with editor or composer or writer. writer, those are the stories that I hear all day, every day. Because I'm sure that as a web developer, it was long hours in front of a computer, sitting there, not very good health, not getting out and exercising too much, lots of pressure, lots of stress, crazy deadlines. And I feel like that's becoming the norm for how most people work nowadays. And I'm sure it was scary to say no, but I bet you look back now and you're like, I can't even imagine if I had said yes and I were still doing that. And having that, having the courage to say no to something when you know in your gut that it's the wrong decision, that's usually where life starts to change for the better. But it's really scary to make that that choice, which is why after working on Cobra Kai for several seasons and saying this is my side hustle and it not being a joke, that was kind of scary because I love Cobra Kai, but I knew I wasn't going to sacrifice my priorities to continue doing that job. And I'm fortunate enough that the people that I work with really trust me and know that I can manage my time. So essentially, they're like, as long as you hit your deadlines, you disappear. You need to take your meetings. You need to coach your students. We don't care. Hit your deadlines and give us good work and you can have all the freedom in the world. So it's it really is the perfect marriage for everyone.
Yeah. It must be wonderful for them as well, having somebody who knows this property inside and out be so passionate about, you know, editing something like that as well. So, I mean, you know, I'm glad that it sounds like they're a really solid, well thought through team that works over there. So,
I've never worked for people that I love working with more that drive me more crazy. So, and I think that they would agree with that. I'm certainly not saying it behind their backs because we all feel the same way. Like, they are so intensely passionate about this. So, we never have arguments. We have very passionate discussions about how we want to approach a training montage or a piece of music. There's never any disrespect on the show. And very rarely have I been at this level on Hollywood shows where there isn't some level of disrespect or egos that get in the way. There's none of that. But there are very heated discussions about, well, we should be using that. Well, here, we should use this clip instead from The Karate Kid. And like, it's just, you know, basically a bunch of geeks that just absolutely love this property that want to make the best version possible. So yeah, it's a great working environment.
Yeah. If that's what you're arguing over and not over, you know, some sort of random crap about sort of
Bible. We don't have to argue about work politics or any of that other crap. It's just, this is what I think is the best version. This is what I think is the best version. And one of the main reasons I joined the program in the first place is because I had this conversation in the interview where I said, I believe the best idea wins. I don't care whose idea it is. I don't care if I'm working late at night and the janitor comes rolling by with their cart and they pop their head in. They're like, you should use a wide shot instead of a close up. If I look at it and they're right, I'm like, yep, your idea is better. I don't care where that idea comes from. And they felt the same way, because I can't stand it when I work for a showrunner or an executive or somebody at the studio that says, do it this way. And they can't explain why it's better. They just need to get their thumbprint on it and show their authority. I can't handle that kind of environment. So that's one of the things I never have to worry about on this show.
No. And it's clearly worked, because we're 5 seasons in. It's a phenomenally successful show for, you know, Netflix. And I'm looking forward to seeing it come back. It's brilliant. Couple of last questions for you. The first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment or have watched recently?
Yes. So there's, without question, the show I recommend everybody sees immediately. Whatever you're doing right now, drop it and go watch Severance on Apple TV.
Yes.
Severance is easily the best show that has come out in years. I was absolutely blown away by it. So much so that, shameless plug, I actually wrote an extensive article all about Severance, and not necessarily a review of it, but a deep understanding and a warning about how this isn't just a dystopian future of our workplace. We're kind of already there. So I was so passionate about it. I watched the whole season twice and had to write about just how brilliant and the way that it's really portraying all of the challenges that we have with our present work culture. And Severance is by far my number one recommendation for anybody looking for a new show.
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree. I think it's brilliant. And yes, I can see why you'd write an article about it, because it fits so much into all the stuff that you're doing with the Optimize Yourself things.
Yeah. And I stumbled on it. I had no idea what it was. Now people are hearing about it because the awards and everything else. It was in like episode 2 or 3, because Apple still does the weekly release. Yeah. And I just finished Cobra Kai season 5, totally exhausted. And I was just going to veg out in front of the TV. I'm like, ooh, what's this? And an hour later, I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect. This is like, it's everything that I talk about with creativity and with TV, but also with burnout and all the things that we're dealing with in the entertainment entertainment industry and toxic work cultures. And like, oh my God, this is like, this is the silver bullet to all of it.
Yeah.
So I just, I lost my mind when I discovered it.
Yeah. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal TV show. And lastly, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something historical from the past, something else that's present day, or some sort of future genre that maybe you haven't worked in yet, what would it be?
I'm going to give you two answers to this. One of which I think is probably a relatively popular answer, which is I would give anything to go back and work on Breaking Bad, because Breaking Bad, I think, is, if yes, not the best, one of the top three shows ever made. But it's not just about being part of something historic that's good, that is that good. It's a show that it's very much up my alley and my style and my taste. And especially with the complexity of a lot of their montages, that's totally my thing.
Yeah.
But I would say that the less popular choice, which is actually probably my favorite TV series, is The Shield on FX.
Right.
I absolutely loved The Shield. And that's a show that had I entered the industry 10 years earlier, probably would have been the one that I pursued the way that I pursued Burn Notice or Cobra Kai, where had I seen even a little bit of it, I would have done everything possible to get my way on that show. But by the time I discovered it and was watching it, I think it was either already done or it was in its final season.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I mean, yeah, The Shield, I know it sort of. It's one of those that I need to go back and watch because I know how brilliant it is and that sort of stuff. Breaking Bad, of course. I mean, yes, that's come up a few times. Better Call Saul is a stunning piece of work as well. I love
And I actually just thought of one more that just came to me that is from your side of the pond, which is Bodyguard on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Fantastic show.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal piece of work. I mean, all pretty much all Jed Mercurio stuff is incredibly impressive. So, yeah, that was particularly good. Some great choices there. And very much looking forward to seeing the next season of Cobra Kai come out. It's been a wonderful, wonderful show. What's the web address for the Optimize Yourself podcast? Where can people
Pretty simple. It is optimizeyourself.me.
Okay, cool. So go and check that out as well, because there's lots of brilliant stuff on there for you, for people to go and check.
And it's available on all the podcast platforms. Just do a search for my name or Optimize Yourself. It's on, you know, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple, Google, all the regular places.
Yeah. So go and check that out as well. It's been wonderful talking to you. It's really, really interesting. You do some amazing, amazing stuff, and hopefully get to talk to you at some point again in the future, maybe about
I definitely hope so. Yeah. I appreciate you taking the time. It means a lot. Thank you.
No worries. No worries at all. Have an awesome day.
I will. You too.
Cheers.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.